Welcome to the Crude Life Podcast. My name is Jason Spies. This is a very special feature on Hurricane Harvey and the impact it is having on other shale plays across the United States. Hurricane Harvey is considered the worst natural disaster in history by many, but what it may have caused in damages, it has not broken their spirit. In the aftermath of the storm, individuals, companies, and organizations are banding together to help those who have been affected, and among them is the oil and gas industry. Several companies have already made more than $3.5 million available to assist the American Red Cross, the United Way, and other organizations in providing relief efforts. Others are expanding or opening up existing programs to provide higher matching contributions from employees and coordinating employee volunteer groups to help, especially since the water has receded and cleanup has begun. The Texas Oil and Gas Association has been working with member companies and other oil and gas associations across the country looking for ways to help. The Texas Oil and Gas Association is recommending considering one of the following organizations for those wishing to help with the relief efforts: the Red Cross, Salvation Army, Greater Houston Community Foundation Hurricane Harvey Relief Fund, the Houston Food Bank, and the Austin Disaster Relief Network. Now, all of those links are available at our website, thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. And once again, those are the organizations that the Texas Oil and Gas Association is asking those people looking to help, if they want to do it directly, to go to those websites and donate to the Red Cross, Salvation Army, Greater Houston Community Foundation Hurricane Harvey Relief Fund, the Houston Food Bank, and the Austin Disaster Relief Network. Again, all of those links are available at our website, thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. Coming back to our Hurricane Harvey Impact special interviews, we talk with William Prentice with the Meridian Energy Group. They're spearheading the Davis Refinery out in Belfield, North Dakota in the Bakken Shale Play. This is William Prentice, the CEO of Meridian Energy Group. Mr. Bill Prentice, Meridian Energy Group, spearheading the Davis Refinery. Fortunate to have the CEO of Meridian Energy Group on to talk a little bit about not only the Davis Refinery and how Hurricane Harvey may impact it. We're kind of talking to some experts. We had Lauren C. Scott on, Justin Kringsted, as well as Jeff Simon with the Dakota Western Dakota Energy Association, Justin Kringsted, North Dakota Pipeline Association, also a few energy columnists, just to talk about the impact that it's having. The disclaimer, you know, this is not to be insensitive in any ways, and we do have some information at the Crude Life's website if you'd like to donate and be part of the relief. This is to really demonstrate how connected oil and gas is, because you hear about a fire happening in the Middle East and gas prices go up. Well, if we have some kind of disaster happening here in our homeland in Texas, well, we are connected to oil and gas. So much of our economy depends on that. And of course, William Prentice, you've got the Davis Refinery out there. First thing that I thought of course, being involved with the Bakken, is Hurricane Harvey. Is that affecting you guys or the Davis Refinery in any way?
Well, yeah, it is. You know, Houston is sort of the energy capital of the United States, certainly, and to a growing extent of the world. Almost all of our engineering and construction contractors are located in Houston. All of the people working on designs for the refinery are located in Houston. So, you know, those people are essentially out of operation right now. So we're going to see a significant amount of delay. But, you know, I mean, a lot of people have suffered quite a bit personally in this storm. And I just have to say that whatever delay that we suffer is inconsequential compared to that kind of loss and suffering.
A couple of the comments that Lauren Scott and I were talking about, and Justin Kringsted and I pontificated on, he didn't have the data or the knowledge to talk about it, but it sounds to me like it's happening to you, Meridian Energy Group, the Davis Refinery, and those comments were, what about the workforce? How is it going to impact the workforce, either from the specialized workers needed down in Houston because of the social responsibility, the nationalism that we have, but also their homes. There might be some people in the Marcellus or the Bakken or wherever where their home is back in Houston, and so they have to go back, or Austin, and go back and assist. And it sounds to me like that is actually happening to you guys. Am I hearing that right? Did I just hear that right?
Yeah, it goes back to the skill sets that we need to get the refinery going, you know, to operate it. We're going to be hiring locally and training those people up. So, you know, the impact is not there. It's on people that we've hired, engineering firms and so forth, that understand how to design these projects, and more importantly, how to design it using modern technology to the kind of air quality standards that we've established for ourselves in this plant. And that's been something that's hurt us over the last week, and I think it's going to take several weeks to recover. And as you mentioned, it's not so much anything professionally. It's just that offices are shut down. People are having to evacuate their homes. One of the gentlemen that is in charge of our project execution, Teo Rizquez, had to evacuate his house. TJ, Tom Johnson, who moved up to Belfield to take over operations at the site, has a house down in Galveston where his son and his family live now. And water was up to within a couple of feet of their doorstep. There's a lot of worrying going on by people that are connected with the project right now. And quite frankly, some of them are just out of operation for the next week or two till they can get their home situation and their offices reopened and so forth. So it's going to hurt us.
Yeah, and our thoughts and prayers continue to go out to those affected by Hurricane Harvey. But like I said before, you know, not to be insensitive, we do need to plan some of our lives accordingly on this. And when I look at, you know, you mentioned Tom Johnson, he's been on this program before, giving us an update. He was out in Belfield, North Dakota, here working on the Davis refinery, you know, and back then we were talking about some different timelines and that sort of thing. And like you and I have in the past, how is this going to impact your timelines? I mean, because so often timelines are based on milestones. And if you've got a disruption, whether it be whatever the reason is, a disruption happening, obviously the timelines and milestones didn't anticipate something like a hurricane. So what's this going to do to your permit process with the Davis refinery with the construction getting underway?
Well, the impact isn't as great as it would have been had we received all of our permits earlier in the year. If we had already received our permit to construct from the Air Quality Division of the Department of Health, this hurricane would be hurting us on a day-by-day basis because, you know, just as an example, one of the long lead time items is the crew tower, and, getting approval of the permit would have put us in position to finalize that design and begin fabrication. Now that we're seeing the delays associated with Harvey, once that permit is granted at some point in the future, we may see a delay because the guys that would do that fabrication for us are not yet back in business. Little pieces like that. Also, when there's a large capacity, increment of refining capacity, such as we see down in the Gulf, that has experienced flood damage, certain pieces of equipment that we would have maybe been able to pick up with a very short schedule will now be in large demand, and we'll have to really work hard to get what we need out in the marketplace according to our schedule. So, you know, you just never know how this is going to impact you until you get back in and start trying to build a project. We have down in the Gulf, there's been 3 million barrels per day of refining capacity that's had to be shut down. Some of it's suffered damage. Some of it just had to shut down because of the disruptions in people getting to work and pipeline access to crude and so forth. We have yet to assess in the industry what the short-term issues are associated with getting that capacity on. And just kind of thinking ahead a little bit, you know, and how that affects the Bakken, for instance. That's three times the amount of oil production that the Bakken is producing every day. So an important demand for Bakken oil has been shut down for the past week, and in some cases can be significantly longer. That's going to impact the producers up there. It's certainly already impacted the price of oil, with WTI going down by about $5. So, you know, the ripple effect is going to spread through up to North Dakota in several different ways, not only just through our project.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. I mean, here the refinery shut down. Of course, that's what made me think of you guys right away. Like, what would happen if our refinery was going on here in North Dakota? And then, of course, I asked Justin Kringstad. He brought up the Dakota Access Pipeline, how that was kind of the way down to the Gulf. You mentioned about how the Gulf has kind of affected North Dakota's downstream production, but reiterate that a little bit. And have you compared or just thought of what would have happened or what it would be like if the refinery was up and running and something like this happened where there was a choke point in one of the, whether it's in Chicago or down in Texas, wherever it might be, how that Davis refinery would play into helping the rest of the nation through this time?
Well, you know, unfortunately, the Davis refinery is going to be relatively small compared to, you know, all the capacity on the Gulf Coast. But the fact that you have a single storm idling 3 million barrels per day of capacity is a great example of how vulnerable our energy industry is because of the concentration of those types of assets in a single location. Another example is Southern California, where you have, I think, well over a million, if not close to 2 million barrels per day of capacity that would be in trouble in the event of a major earthquake. It's not safe to have all of these plants in one spot. It's safer for the industry, for the economy, to have this this kind of asset spread out through the country, where it's not vulnerable like that. You know, as a businessman, I have to say that if we were in operation today, given what's happened over the last week, the price of crude oil has gone down significantly. The price or the value in the market of the refined products has gone up significantly. So we, as a business, would be making a great deal of money right now. And, you know, that's just the way the industry works, the private sector works. But, you know, the overriding message here is the vulnerability of that industry to this type of concentration. And, of course, you know, our philosophy of establishing a niche refinery closer to the crude oil resource is a way around that in the future as we develop more of these projects.
William Prentice, CEO of Meridian Energy Group, spearheading the Davis Refinery, Belfield, North Dakota, up in the Bakken shale play. And I wanted to ask you a quick question, if you had some time, quickly about the, or not quickly, if you have time, great, elaborate, about the synthetic miner source. We've talked about that in the past. And, you know, I'll be honest, I was out at the Bakken barbecue and we're talking to some different people. And it seems like whenever the refinery comes up, and 99% of the comments are positive. The economic development, the stability of jobs, the fact that, you know, the flower shops and the coffee shops and the restaurants are going to have more people and more families and more employees, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The one thing that usually does come up is this emissions, if you will. We'll call it emissions. And I've talked to the Department of Health. I've talked to Terry O'Clair at the Department of Health, and there hasn't seemed to have been any issues that they've told me about, and they have no reason to lie to me. You guys have talked to me about the synthetic miner source. I've talked to your engineers from SEH to Zia Engineers, and so far, I mean, the message seems to be pretty good, but yet there's still that 1% out there that seems to constantly bring that up. And to me, I'm just, I don't know how to communicate to them. I don't know if the scrutiny is even deserved. Are you getting this too, or am I out on an island on this?
Well, Yeah, if you don't mind a somewhat lengthy answer, it is an interesting subject because when we first we filed our initial air quality permit application with the Department of Health in October of 2016, that 1% of people who didn't really believe that we could be a minor source was more like 99% of the people we talked to just didn't believe it. And the fact is, you know, you go with an entire industry trying not to have to spend too much money on upgrades and so forth and kind of getting by. The history in refining has been one of relatively high pollution, and air quality has been the major issue in most refineries around the country. There hasn't been a major refinery built in 40 years, so we have the advantage over everybody in the industry of starting with an empty field and a blank sheet of paper, and we can do whatever we want. So why not build the cleanest refinery in the world? Why not take the last 40 years of advances in technology within hydrocarbon processing, information technology, machining technology, all of these things can go into making a project much more efficient and much better designed. And at a very fundamental level, pollution is really inefficiency and poor design. In a project that's 60 years old, you're stuck with the way things had to be built 60 years ago. But even simple things like pipe flanges can be done to such a high degree of exactitude right now that leaks are relatively non-existent compared to a pipe flange installed in a refinery 50 years ago. So all of this adds up to the ability to dial down the amount of emissions from every single aspect of the refinery. And the net result, a year ago, when we added up our first series of emissions inventories on the initial designs, we ourselves were shocked at the degree to which we could push this down. And when we figured out that we could do things a certain way and make this a synthetic minor source, we were overjoyed. You know, we think this is going to change the industry. Then we began the process of working with the Department of Health, and they were very skeptical that we could do this. And it's been, 10 months now that we've been working with them. And in the process of coming up with answers to every single one of their questions, we have spent an enormous amount of money on additional engineering, far greater than you would normally expect to spend on engineering for a project at this stage. But as a result, we have a much stronger project based partially on the interaction with the Department of Health. We made major design changes in the second phase of the refinery early this year. And as a result of those design changes, we submitted a revised application in April to the Department of Health. That gave rise to another wave of questions and responses. And during the course of this past 10 months, we've managed to make believers out of nearly everyone that we're dealing with. I think a lot of people that are concerned about the park will probably never be believers in this. We'll have to be in operation for years to show them that we've done what we said we could do. But, you know, everybody else, we've been able to benefit from just hard engineering and showing what can be done with modern technology. And we are, in fact, going to be building the cleanest refinery on this planet. And we're going to be proud of it. And I think when the smoke clears, the Department of Health is going to be proud of the contribution they made to this project.
Do you think that's kind of been one of your bigger obstacles, or hurdles? I don't know what would be the correct term. But would that be kind of the biggest thing that's been a surprise, if you will, maybe a surprise, is the sizing up the words and the technology, making sure that what you guys say is accurate, and then also making sure that this new technology as build. Has that been one of the biggest, I guess, surprises that you've seen thus far? And even more so, is the health department treating you guys okay with this?
Well, the health department's been really rough on this, you know. I mean, In my position, I guess I would never find myself in a situation where I would say that a permitting agency was being easy on me, and I wish they would be harder on me. But yeah, they've been really tough, and they've got some really smart guys in there. They came down on us very early on for additional information, and their questions were not just, you know, kind of, we need to know more about this or that. It was very detailed. They understand this business very well. They understand the technology very well. We've been dealing with guys that understand the business and the technology as well as we do. There have been budget limitations at the Department of Health, so they don't have as many people as they probably would like to. But this is not the kind of thing, it's more like brain surgery than digging a ditch. It only takes a couple of really smart guys to do what has to be done in terms of evaluating our project, and they've got that. And quite frankly, you know, stacking the Department of Health up against other agencies we've worked with in the past, there's a consensus within our group, including our engineering contractors, that North Dakota Department of Health understands this better than most of the federal agencies do. Federal agencies might be able to throw, you know, a dozen or two dozen people at a project like this, but they don't understand it any better. They've been tough on us, but, you know, that's okay. They're competent, and that allows us to work things out when there's a question. And again, you know, we've made changes to the design as a result of the process. So the process is working, and the result is going to be a stronger project.
William Prentice, CEO, Meridian Energy Group, spearheading the Davis Refinery out in Belfield, North Dakota, in the Bakken oil patch out there, the shale play. Just kind of wrapping up here a little bit, you mentioned the permit progress, how that's going. If you just wanted to maybe reiterate whether there's a, I know you mentioned the air quality one, if there's the water one, any permits, just kind of where we're at with that, and then maybe a latest news on the Davis Refinery. I know we kind of talked all about it, but, you know, this way we can just kind of summarize it for a nice little sound bite here on building the Bakken and Mondak and all the other programs we have going. So what's the latest on the Davis Refinery and the permits?
Well, just in general, the pacing item, of course, is the air quality permit. We have to finish up some things on water allocation, but I don't think we're looking at any major controversy there. Once we get that air quality permit, we start construction. We would have rather started earlier this summer. We're looking at a winter coming up on us, so maybe that's going to lengthen our schedule. But we're going to be in operation, let's say, 15 to 18 months after we get that permit. And, everything else on the project is basically done, ready to go. And that permit's our final major milestone.
Are you still looking at the same amount of construction workers and employees when it's all said and done? Is that, I suppose, that really hasn't changed much, has it?
No, we're probably going to be peaking out at maybe as high as 500 people in construction. As it's constructed, we'll be adding our permanent staff so that, you know, we're training them as we're building the plant. And that'll be up to about 200 people by the time we're done with the refinery. And let's say we start sometime before the end of this year, we'll be up to full employment by the end of 2018. Once we get that permit, we can also start scheduling things like job fairs and so forth to start the hiring process. In some cases, we've already started. That's why Tom Johnson moved up there earlier this year. He's out there with Todd Tooley and Yvonne, getting ready to start hiring folks.
To listen to the full-length interview with William Prentice, the CEO of the Meridian Energy Group, spearheading the Davis Refinery out in Belfield, North Dakota in the Bakken Shale Play, or to listen to other Hurricane Harvey Impact special features, visit our website, thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. And I do want to mention one more time, for those people interested in participating or being a part of the relief effort, the Texas Oil and Gas Association has been working with member companies and other oil and gas associations looking for ways to help. The Texas Oil and Gas Association recommends considering one of the following organizations for those wishing to help with the relief effort: the Red Cross, Salvation Army, Greater Houston Community Foundation Hurricane Harvey Relief Fund, the Houston Food Bank, Austin Disaster Relief Network. That's the Red Cross, Salvation Army, Greater Houston Community Foundation Hurricane Harvey Relief Fund, the Houston Food Bank, and the Austin Disaster Relief Network. All of those links and organizations can be found at our website, thecrudelife.com. That is thecrudelife.com. And that's going to do it for this special feature on the impact of Hurricane Harvey. Till next time, my name is Jason Spies, asking you to be happy and remember, sometimes life can just be crude.